You are listening to the Photobomb podcast with the world's greatest photographers, Boo Ray and Gary.
Welcome to the Photobomb podcast. My name is Boo Ray Perry, and joining me, as always, is Gary Hughes.
What's going on?
Nothing. And nothing. Good night. We have a third sitting coming back for a third week in a row, and I can't tell you how much we appreciate you driving back.
Really is an effort on his part.
Really, to come back every week like this and be on the show with us is Pete Wright. No, a little golf clap for him.
Thank you. I'm always glad to be here and travel renowned, through the Florida rain that
renowned
I'm becoming accustomed to.
Renowned speaker, author, wedding photographer, author, which applies, I think, to everyone at this
and
table.
And lover of women.
Except for one of
and
them.
And small dogs.
Yeah. I got to tell you what happened to me this last weekend. I was doing an engagement session. And I took a thing with me. You guys, I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's a what do you call a tripod? I took a tripod.
That was my nickname in college.
Was it?
See, that's the kind of humor we're looking for. They're... Way to step your game up, Pete. That's what we need.
Before the show, Pete was like, "I try to hang back with you guys." We're like, "No. Come on
in there.
Pete. Come
Get
on in
there.
Pete." I took a tripod, which I normally don't do because I've got so much to carry. And because I work on the beach, walking on the sand, you know, the less you carry, the better. But I got to tell you, picture's really sharp when you take the tripod.
wait, say that again?
Pictures are really sharp when you use the tripod.
Really?
Yeah, because just the other, you know, I was like, wow, you know, this tripod thing, this might catch on.
Yeah, you think so?
You know, this might be something people
start
doing.
It is funny that it's fallen so out of fashion, especially really with wedding photographers. Yeah. And I think the biggest sort of argument against it is that maybe you can't move as quickly or maybe it's a little cumbersome. But the truth is, like, I, a couple years ago, switched to being a almost always tripod shooter. And I used to be just free-handed. And at weddings, you know, reception and stuff, obviously I'm not on a tripod shooting the first dance. But whenever I can be on a tripod, I'm on a tripod. And I spent the extra money, and I got, you know, like the carbon fiber, which, I mean, it, you're going to jump up in price $400 or $500. I think my whole rig was like $850, which even in terms of tripods, you can go way more expensive than that. But I went, it goes from aluminum to carbon fiber is the jump. And that, I mean, it goes from being like 12 pounds to being like 2 pounds.
Right.
And it's so easy to get around.
Because I've got the Manfrotto with the pistol grip head that you literally could beat a cow to death with this thing. It's like a sledgehammer. It's so heavy.
I would, you know what? Next week on Photobomb Podcast, beating audio of Boo Ray beating a cow to death.
I'm just saying, it's heavy. It's heavy. And I wanted to ask you about that. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that. And it'd be...
I took my kids. We've got 7-year-old twins, and,
right?
And if you're like me, your kids don't let you photograph them very much,
right?
And a friend of mine, Jeff Bowman, has always been really gracious and photographed our children for us. And I took them to the first time I took them over to be photographed. He photographs everything on a tripod. He's got a camera stand, but he has everything on remote. So he gets everything in focus and then steps away and he interacts with him and pushes the button and he's no longer touching or looking through or at the camera. I'm like, man, that's brilliant. I got to try that. So I go and I do a session and I'm outside. I'm not in studio, so not as controlled. Got the camera all set up and I've got everything on remote. I go over and I'm photographing, I'm pushing the button and everything. And then I go back and I realize he's in studios in a more controlled environment where they don't move. I went back and looked, and they were just out of frame.
Focus point, you're focusing on the tree behind them.
Well, no, they weren't even in the picture because they could move more. I mean, in a studio, you got a background that's 10 feet or 12 feet wide, and you know, as long as you catch that whole background, you're good. When you're outside, it's like, oh, if they go 10 feet this way, all of a sudden they're not in shot, and your frame of mind isn't thinking that. So I quickly just got back behind the camera.
My thing is trying to figure out if I want a new tripod because I've got the giant Manfrotto, which when it's fully collapsed is, oh, you know, 2.5-3 feet long because it's a big one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you see the ones like Three-Legged Thing and MiPhoto and Denro, the other companies that are making the carbon tripods that are very light and will compress down to like maybe 20 inches or so, which means it would fit in my case. And I toy with the idea of getting one of those because then I'll put it in my case and I'll have it with me and then maybe I'll use it more if I have it with me. Because the reason I don't use my tripod that much is because I like to have everything in my case. And the tripod now is another thing I have to carry in addition to my case. So a lot of times it stays in the truck. And so I wonder, you know, do you guys have any experience at all with the small light? Because I think a lot of people when they're looking...
Mine's pretty small. Mine's about 22 inches collapsed.
So's mine.
And hey, man, that's how many penis jokes is that? Can we get the one episode? No, God, now I lost. No, I'm kidding. To travel with it, I have to take the pistol head off the tripod to put it in my case. But I've gotten so much to the point where I'm a tripod shooter now that I feel weird not having.
Well, you do headshots too, and when you're doing a headshot, even on location, when you're doing headshots, it's much easier to be a tripod shooter. You get it set up and you're good
to go.
But
it's still not even the majority. It's very unpopular. Like tripods, yeah. But like I said, I was always a freehand shooter, and then when I started shooting a tripod, just seeing the difference in my images, what I'm able to do, I can.
Besides what you do when you're shooting, what do you see after the fact? When you see the image, what's the number one difference between using a tripod and not?
Using in the image itself?
Yes.
Obviously, sharpness is going to be the main thing. It also gives me the ability to do more with my shutter speed because...
You can go slower.
You can drag it.
So I can keep my ISOs lower if I need to, especially at weddings, room shots. I would never do a room shot without a tripod anymore because instead of shooting a room shot at 3200 ISO at f/2.8, now I'm doing it at like f/11 at ISO 400,
and
the quality of
light
you can
go around
so
and
cool
light
stuff.
Each table and then put them all together.
There's so many cool tricks that you can do that other photographers who aren't using a tripod can't do. Like sparkler shots are great with a tripod if you're a wedding photographer. Rear curtain sync, multiple exposures, there's all kinds of rad stuff that you can do that will give your images kind of a really different look that people won't be able to do unless they're doing it. And because the minority of photographers, especially wedding photographers, are using tripods, majority are not. It's a quick, easy way, once you practice with it, to set yourself apart in the kind of work that you can deliver. And especially, I know we talked about on a previous episode how you like to deliver stuff to the venues. The quality of the images that you can give to your other vendors from shooting a wedding with the cool tripod shots you can do. Like, you can make a 40x60 canvas to give to the venue of their beautiful venue decorated perfectly, and it looks amazing from front to back. Every pixel is there, and you can't do that without a tripod. Not even with the high ISOs the cameras can do now, it still won't be the same.
So I just got I guess not technically supposed to talk about it, but I got a super secret tripod that it's they when they sent it to me, they said, enjoy your imaginary tripod that you're not supposed to have and know about.
And by they, we mean...
Benro, B-E-N-R-O. And they have a new system of tripods coming out called the Benro System Go that are made specifically for travel, but they're not weak, lightweight tripods. In fact, mine breaks down to, I want to say, 15 inches, so I can put it into a carry-on. But when it stands up and fully extended, it's 60-some inches.
That's way bigger than mine, fully extended.
I mean,
it is bigger.
It's carbon fipod. Carbon fipod.
Carbon fipod.
Carbon fiber tripod. That's not even really
I like carbon fipod's easier to say. So you're carbon fipod.
We've just rebranded.
That's a great, great electronica band from New Zealand.
Carbon fipod. Yeah. I love their song, One Leg Shorter Than the Other. That's my favorite. Yeah. Or I got sand in the crease, like that stuff. You
their
know?
First album was Monopod.
So bad. The quality of this podcast has gone down so
far. Right down to the toilet.
Anyway, although now we do have the episode title now.
is there more that you want to tell us?
Well, this tripod, the really unique thing about it, it's made for being able to take on the road and travel, but the center post actually comes out and pivots down to
so does my center post. What a coincidence.
We have to stop talking about
the end of these.
You
aren't
know what?
We?
I appreciate what you're saying, Pete, but we're going to change this line we can't continue
with
this.
I actually want to hear about this tripod.
Can you guys
I'm
talk
actually
about it
interested because I'm looking I'm thinking about buying a new tripod, so I want to hear about
this
tripod.
This is so bad.
Well,
it's going to be Pete talking and you and me giggling like little girls.
Why should this be different than any other?
My center post extending. Oh god.
Right. Well, at a 90-degree angle.
90-degree angle.
Boy, that's a real vertical.
Once the tripod's older, it doesn't go to 90 degrees so much anymore.
Is it to the left or to the right?
as the tripod ages, it starts to go more like maybe a 75-degree angle.
And then droops a little.
Yeah, there's a little droop.
I think somebody failed geometry.
No, let me still gets the job done, though. Sure. But
it takes a little longer.
Just takes a little longer.
Wow.
And some people like to take longer.
Oh, God.
So,
all right.
Yeah.
So, Gary.
Yeah.
You wanted to talk about something regarding...
I do. You know, did you guys watch the all I can think about is carbon fipod. did you guys watch the Apple keynote thing recently? They announced the iPhone 6S and 6S Plus. And then the thing, and I've seen...
The new giant tablet?
Yeah.
Did they talk about the new giant
tablet? The iPad
tablet?
Pro. But here's the thing. It's a lot of the photography blogs and websites are picking this up as this thing is going to change the game for professional photography for retouching, and that is the iPad Pro along with the Apple Pencil, which is basically, it's a stylus, and using their like pressure sensitive technology, it's going to give you the functionality basically of a Wacom tablet in just that device that you can do on your iPad.
Wacom makes a tablet that has a screen built into it, but now you're saying that the
iPad
would
be that. But it's like $2,000, right, whereas the iPad Pro will be somewhere in the like the $500 or $600 range.
And it is a computer.
Range. Yeah.
It's not a periphery device. It is a computer.
But here's the thing. We've talked about on the show before that I'm not a tablet stylus guy. Do you edit with a stylus?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Helen Yancey said a long time ago, if you're doing Photoshop with a mouse, it's essentially like using a rock. And I agree with that now.
Well, I would challenge you. You know what we need to do? We need to have a side-by-side.
You would almost have to be an imbecile to just use a mouse. Wouldn't you?
I don't know.
So, Gary,
it's like using crayons.
Yeah. Like the Husky pencil when you're in the first grade.
Exactly.
Right? That's exactly like
but
the
you
Husky.
Always won the pencil fight. So.
Yeah, you did. That's right.
Oh, I forgot about pencil fights. Yeah. Well, thanks, you guys, because I do, as everyone, all our listeners knows, that I learned using a mouse. I didn't even know these stylus things existed by the time I was already working and didn't feel like learning to use one. And I'm pretty fast and my editing's minimal. But for those who are, this is supposedly has the potential to be something that's going to really change how photographers are able to work. Imagine, like, you're able to take just an iPad Pro and the little Apple Pencil with you on a job, and you can pull stuff up and potentially, like, edit and do your work right there on the spot. And it could make – there's so many implications of this. But here's a thing that I wanted to address about Apple. And my wife and I both have Apple laptops. I use a PC for my main work at the studio. You know, because I used to be a computer tech and I build my own machines and stuff now.
That's me. I'm a gamer, so I'm a PC guy.
So
my wife and daughters are all Apple. Right.
And so, you know, and the Windows platform isn't bad. I think I'm still using Windows 7 because everybody knows Windows 8 is a huge hunk of turd. But so we have iPhones. You know, we use
Apple
products.
Let me just clarify. Huge hunk of turd.
Huge hunk of turd.
Not a turd.
Just a huge hunk
but,
of it.
But like, so is this a
imagine
huge...
the actual turd would be even bigger, but just, right, it's just a hunk of it.
Okay.
Is a huge steam coming from that?
But is it a huge hunk, or is it a huge turd with a hunk removed?
It's a hunk of a huge turd.
Okay. Semantically, I want to understand what I'm visualizing.
This episode's gonna have no education content. So what I want to make the point about the Apple Pencil is like Apple has before the death of Steve Jobs. Apple was this company that they came out with things that nobody had done before.
Right.
And they came out with products that revolutionized everything.
Right. The iPhone, the iPod.
And to the point where if somebody else came up with an idea that would have been better, Apple just ignores it and does something else. They've never been one to, even when a good idea comes out with one of their competitors, they've never been one to chase technology.
Right.
They're always like, fine, they're doing that, we're going to do another thing.
Right.
And now I feel like in the last, although I still think obviously the products are good or else I wouldn't be spending my money on them, but I think that in the last few years since the death of good old Steve Jobs, think what you want, but the direction of the company has taken a much more play catch-up approach than it has in previous years, whereas they're very famous now for coming out with a technology that another company's been using for 5 or 6 years and going, this is the most amazing thing.
Yes.
Like, Samsung and plenty of other makers have been using the stylus for years, and now Apple's like, but it's an Apple Pencil, and it's supposed to be more magical somehow.
Right. I have a Galaxy Note 4, which has got the stylus built into the phone.
And the irony of it all is there's a company called 53 that already...
Wait a minute. Is this a secret company like the tripod?
No, this is not. Okay. But they had a stylus called Pencil that... are operated exactly like the Apple Pencil, except for beyond it, because the Apple Pencil, what a lot of people don't realize, only works with the iPad Pro. So if you have an original iPad or iPad Air, one of those, it won't operate with it. However, the 53 Pencil actually operates with all of the iPad versions that are out there, and it's wider, so it's easier to hold, and it's magnetic, so it sticks to the iPod.
But does it have the same pressure sensitivity and all that stuff?
It has all the same things. So when Apple came out...
It's wider, it's easier to hold, and it's sensitive?
So when Apple came out and said, we're going to come out with this thing called the Pencil, 53 had an opportunity to say, hey, wait, we already own that. But they let it go. They didn't mess with it. In fact, they did something ingenious. They said, well, when people search this Apple Pencil, we're obviously going to pop up. So Apple's doing theirs at $99. We're going to drop our price to $49. So you can
sold
for $49, you can get this pencil from a company called 53 that does all the same things but works on your current iPad, which is really cool.
Well, that's the thing, is like sometimes they'll come out with something and the technology isn't even quite as good. Like even when the iPhone came out, I remember when it first came out, it didn't do video.
Right.
And then all these phones came out emulating the iPhone in so many other ways, but then they would add features like this one does video and this does this, and you know this you can work two apps at the same time. And it's basically Apple will sort of add those things in as an afterthought later, and then they would come out with something that would change the game. And now it's play catch up.
Yeah,
they did
two great examples of that is all the time when I go to my watch and people go, "Ooh, is that the Apple Watch?" No, it's the Moto 360 that works with Android and it's been out for 2 years.
Right.
You know, and then the other one is incredibly slipped my mind.
Well, and to me, I find it interesting that Apple still refuses to put the SD card slot or USB.
Apple
Yet
Pay.
They still call themselves Pro.
Yeah. There's the other one, Apple Pay.
Apple Pay.
You can pay with your phone. Apple Pay. Google Wallet. 5 years old now. I've been paying with Google Wallet for 5 years.
Hey, I just want to, for our listeners, this is not a bash Apple session.
No.
No, I use Apple.
I've
got an iPad. I've got a Mac. I'm holding my iPhone.
But it's genius marketing.
Product.
It's genius marketing the way that whenever they come out with something, people act like it's this new thing. No, it's not. It's just new for Apple.
Right. But they have a tendency to always put a new spin on it. But is that going to – here's the thing. It doesn't seem to be hurting them. I just read – in Forbes magazine that Apple is worth $700 billion and it's on track. It is the most valuable American company in the history of the world. And it's also on track within the next 18 months to be worth $1 trillion.
Wow.
Like there's no way that it's hurting them to be doing what they're doing, because at this point is their fan base so ingrained they'd really have to screw the pooch to get people to stop buying their products.
Well, what other company gets the hype they get when they announce a product? I mean, if Samsung comes out with a new product or any other company, Windows, they don't have this massive stage.
They don't have a keynote about it. You know?
None of that happens, and you don't have the buildup and the excitement with the ticker countdown on their
website.
Well,
they've got such a diehard base. Apple people just love and
photographers
adore
have always made up a huge part of that base. Mm-hmm. Even back when, to have an Apple, you had to not have a whole bunch of stuff because Apple was not part of the mainstream, and photographers still insist that they're better machines for video editing, photo editing, and that is so debatable. And maybe that used to be the case, but it's just the brilliance of their marketing and their strategy to sort of create this hype around what they do. I will say this, that over the years, I have had phones that weren't Apple and phones that were and use operating system that is and isn't. The main thing in my mind that Apple has going for it is that their products, there's two things. One is that their products are incredibly easy to use.
Intuitive,
that just the way that everything works. And I've used Android phones, and it's a lot less so in a lot of cases, depending on which manufacturer is making it. And the other thing is that if you buy, like, an iMac, entry-level, $900 or whatever it is for, like, the 15-inch iMac, you've got one company that's responsible for the hardware and the operating system and peripheral devices or whatever. Whereas if you go buy an HP and you start to have problems with your computer, you call HP, they'll go, "Oh, that's an issue with your operating system. You got to call Microsoft." And then you call Microsoft and wait on the phone for an hour to talk to somebody, and they go, "Ah, that's actually a hardware issue. You're going to need to call HP." And they go back. If you've ever been stuck in that.
The chip is by Intel, and the processing card is by Radeon.
And the graphics processing unit, and then the software that governs the graphics is, whatever, ATI. And you don't get that with Apple. Apple claims responsibility for everything that's inside that computer. So people, if anybody I know has a lot of trouble with computers, I always recommend, whether or not I think it's a better machine, I recommend an Apple, because you're just not going to have less problems with it, not because they malfunction less, just because there's one place to go that you need to go to get it fixed, and they'll take care of you from start to finish.
Well, not to mention, there's a lot less people writing viruses for Apple products.
I think there are more now, way more than
there now,
used,
but
it's still more
way less than Windows.
Way less.
We have a question from a listener.
All right.
And it's a good question today, because this is something
that was
you
a really rough segue.
I don't see why we have. What's even worse than a rough segue is when you try to do a segue that fails.
I like that, though. That's fine.
I don't like the failed segue. But speaking of Apple, if an apple fell from a tree and it hit a wedding photographer, he might ask this next question.
Dude, that's great.
I just don't want to fall off of a
genius. That's so good. We should do that.
I think I deserve credit for the fact that when you two were just having a serious conversation about how the pencil was sensitive and thicker that I didn't chime in. I didn't chime in with any comment.
Oh, man.
I deserve credit
but
for that.
But no, credit is gone because you just brought it up.
Yeah. I think it's a carbon fipod pencil.
There you go.
Carbon fipod pencil.
Mr. Tim Guns from somewhere in the Milwaukee area.
Tim Guns. Milwaukee, Wisconsin?
Guns. Well, Gums. He's from the Milwaukee area.
Hi, Tim. Thanks for writing into us.
He wrote in. He said, recently in the last year, he started doing wedding photography in addition to my sports and senior portrait work. I've recently run into issues with the idea of package bundle deals where clients are wanting to do a fair amount of swap outs for different artwork, which I am in no way opposed to. Do the two of you, in this case the three of us, think it would be better to offer as the photographer a base rate for shooting said event and then move to a more a la carte style package where the client can mix and match up to a certain price until I find what works best for my coverage area and clientele? What do you think?
So the question is essentially packages versus a la carte, and what's the best way to present that to your clients?
I think so, but he's also saying that do I use a la carte as a testing ground as well. Mm-hmm. By doing a la carte for a while, I can find out what my average client wants, and then I can create packages that are keyed to that. So that's one question. But the bigger question
sounds like a lot of work.
But the bigger question is, you know, how do you do your packages? That's the bigger question.
Yeah. How is your package, Pete?
How is your package?
It's carbon.
Carbon. iPod.
You know, the one thing that I learned early on is that if you're constantly changing your structure of how you sell your product to your clients, you a lot of times you'll forget or you'll fumble through it yourself.
Right.
And to me, if you find one system that works for you and commit to it and own it, then when you speak with it, you speak a lot more confidently about it.
Right.
It doesn't mean you have to be inflexible. It doesn't mean that you have to not want to, you know, make allowances for them. But if you're just really, really comfortable in what you're selling and what you're doing with your customers, it makes it easier for them because they don't feel like you're questioning what you're doing. And a lot of times you won't have them saying, well, can I switch this? Can I change this?
So you don't think there's... You don't think there's so much a right way to do it as you need to pick a plan and stick to it.
Right. I mean, we've played with all kinds of ideas when we were starting. We started out with a package system that always included a certain amount of time and an album and certain portrait sessions and things like that. And, you know, as we went through, we said, you know, the easiest thing we can do is give customers a reason to move up and maybe add more value in packages above. And so rather than them saying, hey, can I add this? Can I take this out or whatever? Put it in the next package or the next package. And that gives them incentive to say, well, yes, you can have that. It's in the next package.
Do you run into any problem, though, with people saying, you say it's in the next package, mm-hmm. and they look at that package and they go, okay, great, but the next package also has some stuff that I don't necessarily need. So now I kind of feel like you're, you know, hitting me up for, you know, for extra, you know what I'm saying? Do you run into that problem? And if so, how do you deflect it?
You know, we have it. And the biggest thing is we didn't fill our packages with a ton of fluff. The biggest difference.
Don't like to fluff your packages.
No.
Don't fluff the package.
Don't fluff the package.
Our packages always consisted of.
Shoplift the pootie.
Downhill. Our packages consisted of a certain amount of time, a certain type of album, and an online gallery with the two of us photographing. So really, as you moved up, it was maybe a little nicer album or more pages or a larger size or, you know, different elements to it. So it wasn't like we were saying, but you can also get this session and this session included as well. It was basically, here's three criteria for every single package. And if you want a different album, then it comes in this package. And okay. If you want more time, then it comes in this package, and you'll also get a nicer album.
I do want to make the point that you can make your packages so convoluted that if your pricing is difficult for people to understand, you're going to have a hard time selling it.
Right.
Because when people get confused about buying situations, they either default to not buying it or buying the smallest thing just to make sure they're not going to make a mistake. And so the thing that we have seen that really helps us book more but also sell more, we push our sales on a wedding till after the wedding. We really don't try to lock them into specific products. What I'll do is we sell the hours of coverage and then product credit. And so basically we have an a la carte menu, and they can purchase hours of coverage with, let's say, if they got $1,000 in product credit, which means after the wedding, they can use that $1,000 in product credit to buy whatever they want off of our list of products. And they're not locked into any specific items. And this is a really cool thing, and there's three reasons why that this works really well. One is because they're already making a ton of decisions as far as their vendors are concerned for their wedding. And so that's one less decision you put on them. So when you tell a bride and groom that they don't have to decide what stuff they have to get right this second, right, you can literally watch their faces just go, oh, God.
Yeah.
God,
my system is very similar to what you do.
Well, and the other thing is that they've already spent in. So we sort of say, okay, what do you want? Do you think you're going to want an album? Yeah, maybe. We could think about it. And you're going to want all the images digitally. Yeah, oh, definitely. Okay, so let's go ahead and let's get you enough product credit to get you kind of an entry-level album and the images. You don't have to use it for that, but just so when we get to it later, that money will be banked and you can do that exactly as planned, or you can change your mind at any time. It's fine. And they love that. But the other thing is that you're removing yourself by pushing the sale to after the wedding. You're removing yourself from the competitiveness of having to compete with other vendors for the same dollars. And so you go to the end, and now you're the only person. What other wedding vendor is trying to sell them stuff after the wedding? Nobody is.
Right.
And so it's just you. And not only that, but if it's a month or two after the wedding, they've had a little time to recover financially.
Now they want a nicer album than what was in their package.
But here's the part three. Part three is that they've got $1,000. They've got $1,000 in product credit, which means they've got $1,000 gift card to your store.
Right.
And so, as we all know, money spent is money forgotten.
Right.
And so, when they've got $1,000 and it's 2 months after the wedding, and they're looking at your prices, go, well, that album's $1,500, and we've already got $1,000. We can have $500. You know. And I've done this so many times that my upsell after it's in oftentimes will double the original buy-in.
Right.
And it enables us to give them flexibility, but also takes us out of being competitive with other vendors. We do have an a la carte price list, and we do have suggested collections. There's no discount, but it's like this many hours of coverage, this album and images or whatever with a price on it, just because some people need that, like fast food.
Right.
I need a number. I need to be able to go that package.
Right.
But we have a la carte suggested collections, which, you know, whatever.
Where does the discount come in?
No discount.
Okay. You have no discount.
The only discount is if a client gets an album, they get a discount on the high-res digital images.
Okay.
So we normally charge, let's say if we charged $1,000 for your high-res digital images as one of the products we sell from the wedding, then if you get an album, then we'll give you the high-res digital images for $500.
Okay.
Because I know if I get them into an album, not only am I going to upsell a bigger album with more pages, but once that album is designed, I'm going to sell that same album to their parents. I'm going to sell it to their grandparents. I'm going to sell it to their step-parents. I'm going to sell it to – and I've sell that same album 5 or 6 times every wedding, which is how I get a wedding that maybe the couple only spent $3,500, but I'll end up making $8,000 or $9,000 off of that wedding. As soon as that album – as soon as I got a foot in the door and the design work is done, the album's laid out, I can resell that album again and again and again to anybody who'll buy it, and it opens me up for a lot more profit in the long run.
Okay. I do it very similar to that. But what I ran into when trying to do packages was that I offer too much.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't come up with three things that would meet everybody's needs. And also because I get such a variety of people who come to me. And I get the people who say, we just need 4 hours, you know. And so what really changed it for me was when I added my photo booth, because then it was like, okay, now you're starting to add. And for an example, another example would be that engagement sessions with me are not included. Most photographers are like, oh, and it includes a free engagement session.
Secret,
I don't do that.
I hate doing engagement sessions.
If you want an engagement session with me, you have to buy
the engagement session.
And it comes with a product, you know. So but there's a couple of different products that I offer with the engagement session. So that right there is 4 or 5 little decisions you got to make, maybe, in addition to the photo booth decision, in addition to the album decision, in addition to how much time you want.
Just so much to
There were so in. Many things. Yeah. And so I decided the way I was going to do it, and I'm the only person I know who does it this way, although Gary is kind of similar. I said, here's what I want to do. First of all, I want to find out what the minimum is I want to make to shoot a wedding on a Saturday. Okay, that's my starting point. If you want to book me, you have to commit to this amount of money. How you spend that money is entirely up to you. And I tell them that. How you spend it is entirely up to you. All you have to do today is decide, I'm your guy, you're prepared to spend that budget, and you want to give me a deposit, and then we're good to go, and you don't have to make any more decisions today. As Gary said,
That's my favorite line.
They love it. They love it when you go, no more decisions today. I know you've got so many decisions to make with your vendors. This will all be worked out in the future. All we need to know is
the best closing line to book a wedding.
Yeah, is this in your budget? Is this in your budget? Am I your guy? Great. Then we can. Then that's all we need to know right now. So that I do that, but then I do have packages, but it's all simply dollar amounts.
Yeah, the one thing that we said that was kind of that kind of fell in line with what you guys are talking about is with all of our packages, we always told all of our clients, look, you can book us today for our smallest package. And
right,
in the future, if you want to move up, you can. There's
sure,
no pressure.
Yeah, I do the same thing.
If you know for a fact you want to book us, just book our smallest package.
Get them in the door.
Yeah. Right. That's what I tell them. And I say, listen, but I do offer a discount. And it's a straight monetary discount. So that my thing is, it isn't, well, you get a discount on this if you buy this. Mm-hmm. It's, if you spend this much money, I'm going to give you a credit for $200. If you spend this much money, I'm going to give you a credit for $300. And at any point in this process, even after the wedding, if it's still pertains to this wedding, if you ever cross that threshold, I'm giving you that discount. So this is your bronze package, but if you add this and then add this, then that's the silver. And then if your parents come back and want an album too, you've just qualified for the gold, and I'm going to give you another discount for that. And it's worked out pretty good for me, but mainly because, like Gary said, I get so many people who are just like, well, let me just book the minimum and get you locked down, and then you hit them again and again and again, and as it goes on is when they start to add stuff on.
I think that will thoroughly and adequately answer Tim's question.
Yeah, I think so. So what the general thing we're saying to Tim is that
pick something and stick to it.
Pick something and stick to it,
and keep it simple as possible.
Yeah, keep it simple, because I've lately toyed around with the idea of trying to go back to a package A, package B, package C system, because I do think it's easier for the photographer in the respect that you're not constantly selling. Or, you know, checking in and saying, by the way, do you want to, those photographers, like, I saw a photographer at Speak at Imaging a couple of years ago. She has one package. That's it. Mm-hmm. If you book with me, this is your package. But I got to believe that you lose more people with that than you gain.
I think that it depends on your business model, because there are certain types of people that mentally, this is how they see the world and how they organize their lives. So if you get somebody that comes in, there are package people, there right. are a la carte people, and then there are wheeler dealers. And so you're going to get all three, and then some others that I haven't even heard of before. The package person's going to come in, and they're going to compute with them. They're going to see a package and go, clearly that's the one. It's in my budget, and those are the things, and I like that, and that's a package. And there are people that look at a package, and they feel like they're being sold to, and they just want to do things their way. And then there are the people that get a package and then want to swap a bunch of stuff out. And you have to be able to decide, okay, if you're going to be the person that this is my, I'm going to do $6,500 and that's going to be my wedding and that's the only package and here's what you get and that's just what I do. Yes, you're going to lose people, but the people you get are going to be the people that think like you think. They're going to relate to these things the way that you do. You're going to eliminate personality types that are in conflict with your own depending on how you build your pricing model. You got to understand the psychology of it is that if you want to have a business that can, you literally will take anybody and shoot their wedding and do any job and everybody's your client. Or do you have a business model where you're looking for specific types of people?
Yeah.
And your pricing model can be one of those things that will define who your client is for you.
I one thing I do like about the set package thing is that when you're selling it to your client, you can do the thing where you lay the stuff right in front of them. Mm-hmm. You get this album and this. Now, if you step up to the blah, blah, here's get this, this, and this. And by the time you're finished, they've got a huge stack of merchandise in front of them. I'd like to have that huge stack of merchandise. You know? Mm-hmm. And I like that idea, whereas with my a la carte system, it's whatever you want. You know, and so
some people need more guidance.
Yeah, you don't get
just
to give
whatever
that.
You want.
The one thing that you have to be cognizant of is try not to laugh when a bride and groom ask to talk about your package.
Yes.
Hey, so I have.
Thank you for bringing that full circle.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, Pete, you've been on point today, buddy.
Trying,
I just want to say you're doing a really good job. I want to give a shout out to a friend of the show.
All right.
Our good friend Sarah Ackerman.
Who
works at PPA.
Love Sarah.
Now, I have a funny story because I was in Atlanta for some work recently. A lot of my clients, headshot clients, are in the Atlanta area now because that's where film and television is really big right now. And so I went up to Atlanta. I had a commercial job I was shooting and headshot sessions that I was shooting. And I was there for a couple of days, but I went by myself because there's no sense bringing the whole tribe with me just to be in and out. And, it cuts into the bottom line, all that stuff. But I was there. And so I had the night free after the first day of shooting. And the people think that being a destination photographer of any kind is so glamorous.
No.
But in truth, it's not.
No. I get to fly to a wedding. They'll say, I want to hire you to shoot my wedding.
It's glamorous.
We'll give you a free
trip
to San Juan. Yeah. It's not a free trip to San Juan. I'm going to be working in San Juan.
Well, it's the perception from the outside, especially new photographers. They look at photographers when they're like, "Oh, you shot a wedding in New York, and the next week you were in Mexico, and the next week you were in Seattle." And I work all over the country for certain clients. And here's how it goes: I fly in early in the morning, or late in the afternoon, and I basically have that day with nothing to do. Because I have to be able to go to the site, set up the job, and then the shoot's usually the next day. And then if the shoot goes well, that's fine, but I'm still not flying out that day because I have to leave room in case there's some sort of weather problem and I need to reshoot, yada, yada, yada. So I'm always flying in one day, and on the third day, I fly back out. So I've got 1-2 nights, sometimes 3 if something goes, where I'm just by myself in a town that I don't live in.
That's when I get the text.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that's when I call you because I'm like, God damn it.
Gary, never text me. Never text me at night or during the week, and then I'll get a text. Hey, man, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, Gary's out of town.
Yep. Because I fly into some place, and then I go and I check into the DoubleTree or or whatever, Country Suites or something, and I'm just sitting there like, okay, so they have HBO. That's good. And there's a pizza place that delivers. But it's boring. I'm sitting there just completely bored out of my mind. So Atlanta is a town where I was recently that I'm more familiar with. And I know a couple people up there. So I put out on Facebook, which I don't always do when I travel. It's like, hey, I'm going to be in Atlanta. Anybody want to hang out? And, of course, right away, Sarah hits me up on Facebook. Boom. Yo, let's hang out. But the night that I was going to meet up with her, she was busy doing all this stuff because she's an improver.
She's an improv. And she's an improv comedian. She's a member of a troupe.
She's in two different ones that I know of. Right. And one of them is really hard to get into. It's a very famous one in Atlanta. It's called Dad's Garage.
Right.
And I think 80 people applied to when they were adding people to the cast. I think they selected 7 out of the 80, right. And she was one of the 7. So it's a really prestigious for improvers in Atlanta. But I was by myself, and we hadn't made any plans to meet up. So I went to a couple of bars and I got some dinner. And then I went to the world-famous Claremont Lounge. And if you're not familiar with the world-famous Claremont Lounge, it is a club. It is a bar in Atlanta that is a strip club where all the strippers are over 50.
Okay.
Wow.
So it's like comedy strip club almost. So you're definitely not going there because it's sexy. It's like a local institution. Like celebrities that travel go in there and visit, and they got like $2 PBRs and old strippers. And it's like it's kind of a hipster bar. Like it's not like a normal strip club. Like you go in there, it's just a bunch of dudes having bachelor parties, right. And then there's the creepy old lonely guy. It's a lot of couples and like young people just hanging out, drinking, and there just happens to be, you know, greater than middle age strippers dancing around. And let me tell you what, at least if you're judging by the Wednesday early evening talent, definitely we call it the C squad for sure.
Yeah.
But so I'm sitting in there.
As in C section.
Too much.
We've gone from droopy tripods to 50-year-old strippers in
one episode. Yeah,
this is amazing.
This is epic. Yeah. So I'm sitting there. It's 8 o'clock at night, and for if you've ever been to any kind of bar, 8 o'clock's an early time of day to be there. So I'm with like the C squad by myself. There's 2 other people in the bar. And I just got nothing else to do. I don't, hadn't really heard back from other people I was trying to connect with. And then Sarah messaged me. She goes, hey, what are you doing? I go, sitting in the Claremont Lounge. She goes, at 8 o'clock? Are you drunk already?
You should be.
She goes, I'm on my way to do an improv show. I'm coming to get you. You're on my way. Literally like 3 minutes later, she opens the door, bright light shines into the room. Everybody like covers their eyes. And she's like, come on, let's go. And we jumped down and then we went. I got to see her do improv. And we hung out. We ended up at Waffle House at like 2 in the morning and got waffles. It was great. We had an amazing time, and she saved me from the normal humdrum boredom that is working as a destination photographer because it is definitely not as glamorous as it appears to be. So, Sarah, thank you for saving me.
Sarah's
I really
fantastic.
Appreciate
and,
you.
And Sarah, for me, is a kindred spirit because I was an improver as well. I was an improv group in Dallas, not as famous as the one that she is in. So she's certainly more qualified than I am.
Who isn't?
Yeah, but that's true. But so I love Sarah, but the fact that she's also an improv comedian, I really relate to her. And that's one of the things.
And I do believe she's a fan of the show also.
I think she probably is.
So hopefully she'll hear this.
Until the day.
How are we doing on time? Haven't we been talking for a while?
No, I think we're just about ready to be done. We have a couple things we need to promote.
Oh, we do. Okay, Tallahassee. I'm going to be in Tallahassee with the Tallahassee Professional Photographers Guild. I will be doing a one-day workshop. This is a PPA-certified workshop, so if you attend this workshop, you will also get a PPA merit for your education, and it will be on October 27th. We will start off in the studio, and then we will go to the beach, and I will show you how to shoot under the worst lighting conditions possible. So that's the whole goal of the workshop is no matter where you are, no matter what time of day it is, you can pull off good photography, and I'm going to show you how to do that. And then hopefully we'll get a nice sunset, and I'll also show you how to do the beach sunset off-camera light pictures that I do
so
much with my wife.
The Boo Ray Perry special.
The Boo Ray Perry specials, yes. So I'm going to teach you all of that, and that's going to be in Tallahassee on October 27th. In addition to that, I will be speaking at Imaging USA this year in pre-con, actually teaching, not speaking, so pre-con class. So sign up for pre-con and come see me, and I will
and
teach you.
And get your hands on his package.
That's right.
Woo-hoo.
I will have my tripod, and I will be teaching you all of the lighting that goes
carbon
with the wedding.
Tripod.
Everything from bounce flash to off-camera flash to natural light, everything you can use in every situation to get good pictures during a wedding. Gary.
Yes, I will be at Photo World Chicago November 6th, 7th, 8th, or 7th, 8th, and 9th. Just Google Photo World Chicago, and I will be there. I'll be doing a wedding program from the platform, and then the next day I'll be doing a hands-on masterclass headshot program, which will be really cool. So it's going to be about – it's going to be a six-hour, all-day hands-on headshot program as a masterclass after. So that'll be really, really cool. It'll be November in Chicago, so hopefully it won't be too cold, but – we're going to have a really good time.
Pete.
Say hi to Bert Banky for me.
I will say hi to
Bert.
Hey, Bert.
Yeah, I know Bert.
Everybody knows Bert.
All right, Pete.
Hey, Bert.
What about you? What do you got?
I've got a little one coming up. At TAPA, the Tampa Area Professional Photographers Association, in November, I think on the 9th. It's the second Tuesday of the month.
Yeah, second Tuesday
and
of the month.
And then, like, the next day, I fly out to Oregon for their Professional Photographers Association convention. I'll be judging and speaking in Oregon. That same week, and then...
What's the program on in Oregon?
In Oregon, it's a wedding program called Separation Anxiety. Ooh. So it's just finding ways to separate yourself from your competition and not...
Clever title.
Not flip out while you're trying to do it. And then I'll be crossing the pond, as it were, to speak at SWPP, the Societies, in London in January, and then back here for Vegas for WPPI in March.
I am blown away by... how much more of a big deal he is than
I
both
swear
of us.
To God. Could you please stop bringing in people on the show who are bigger than us?
We need to bring Derek back in.
Yeah.
Just bring my assistant back.
Yeah, let's get the intern back in on the show. I like those shows much more.
If you ask my kids, I'm so not a big deal, right. So it's okay.
I want to touch on that just for a brief second before we finish out. Isn't it funny, no matter how big of a name you become in your industry, and you know, and Pete, you've accomplished a lot. You've been a part of a lot of the. You've spoken on every stage and been a part of every association, won awards and stuff. But isn't it funny how much that shit does not matter at all to your friends and family? Like they don't even get it.
Take the trash out.
No, my wife.
I'm a master photographer. Damn it.
My wife could care less. Yeah. She doesn't care a bit about any of that stuff. All she cares about is, are you going to go get me some wine?
And
I need
care
wine.
Less about your danglies either.
Yes, they don't care about the danglies. Ray Romano had a story. Once he was talking about being worried about his success and the effect on his kids. He said they were driving through a drive-thru and it was late at night, and they pulled up and they were like, hey, you know, can we get, he said, you know, can we get blah, blah, blah. And they were like, oh, you know, that stops at 10 o'clock. We don't make those after 10. He goes, and my son in the back seat leaned forward and said, tell them who you are, Dad. And Ray was like, oh, that's not good. That's not a good sign. That's not good.
You know, if you listen to Mark Maron's podcast, WTF, he had President Obama on his show. Huh. And he was the first time a president has ever been on a podcast. It was a big thing in the podcasting world because Mark Maron's got one of the most popular podcasts in the world. And it was really funny. President Obama was talking about his daughter, Sasha Malia, about how they just don't give a crap that he's the president of the United States. Like, everybody else has to be like, Mr. President, Mr. Right. President, Mr. President. And his daughter's like, they think he's so boring. They're like, he's like, I tried to tell him stuff. He's like, they don't even care.
No.
But that's a killer episode if you're interested. It's a really cool to listen
he,
to.
He does his show, like, out of his garage.
Yeah, yeah.
The president didn't come to the garage.
Yes, he did.
Did he really?
They had the Secret Service blocked off the whole street, and he had, like, a sniper on his neighbor's roof and stuff. He actually does a few minutes leading up to the interview talking about sitting there and waiting for the president to arrive. That's pretty funny. So
wow.
Really, really cool.
I am going to check that out.
Yeah, it's definitely worth it.
Yeah, that's worth
so,
it.
All right. Wrap us up, Boo.
That's it. So you can find us online. We are at photobombpodcast.com. And you can send us questions or comments. Please send them to questions@photobombpodcast.com. We'll read them on the air and we'll talk about them and try to answer your questions. It may not be a good answer, but it will be an answer.
An answer.
Of some
answer.
Sort. Yes, there will be an answer in there somewhere. You can find me online at booreperry.com. You can find Gary at hughesfioretti.com.
Well done.
And Pete, we can find you where?
PeteWrightPhotography.com.
PeteWrightPhotography.com. I think that's it for this week.
That's it.
All right, we'll see you next time.
Carbon Fipod.